Hi, this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Manton Reese.
And this is Core Intuition. Maybe we should wait another month. Manton, do you hear that silence of my home office? There are no jackhammering radiator pipes pulsating through the air, which has been the soundtrack of my life for this past week or so as the temperature here plummeted so low that our heat, which, you know, is normally just kind of on every once in a while, has been like struggling to keep up with the, the 10 degree weather.
10 degrees. It's cold here too, but not that cold. A couple days ago, it was 25 for a while, not just like a couple hours. Usually it'll dip below freezing just for like, you know, between 3 in the morning and 5 in the morning or something. But it was actually cold for a sustained period of time.
Yeah, I was actually looking at the national map to try to get a sense for how dramatic this cold spell is. And the awful lot of the country is down to 30 or 20 degrees. So we don't have much to, I don't have much to whine about on that front, but I'm sure, dear listeners, I'm sure if you stick around for a few minutes, I will come up with something else. Yeah. Well, I can whine that just to accommodate our prestigious show here, I turned the heat off. So that's why we don't hear the clanging pipes. But later in the show, as I start to chatter my teeth and my voice becomes, you know, jostled by the vibrations of my jaw, that will be the payback time.
Sacrifice you make for the show. But yeah, it's not, but you know, you're having a real winter. It's good. I don't know. The kids, they wish it was snowing already and they don't understand why it doesn't. So every once in a while, we wish we had a real winter. It's cold, but we don't have the, we don't have anything else to go along with that cold.
The problem is, and I love coming from California, I have this, I'm like, I grew up in California, in an area of California where there are practically no seasons. There's kind of two types of people from California. The kind of person who is in love with the lack of seasons and really, really, really gets miserable anywhere else. And then I'm the other kind of person who's like, oh my God, there's this whole other world out there with seasons. And it can be, you know, cold part of the year and hot another part of the year. And and that means that you can enjoy different things. Like you can enjoy swimming in the summer and you can enjoy playing in snow in the winter, and you can enjoy walks through, you know, fall foliage in the fall. And there's all this, I like the variation, I guess. And there's no variation like that in, there's very little variation like that where I grew up in California. But I have to say this 10 degree business, it sort of, that's maybe about the level where it stops being like fun winter weather.
Right.
I mean,
it's too much of a season.
It's like, I don't have the right equipment for this. I don't have the, and I like, I don't have like equipment for my kids. I took my kids to school yesterday morning and, you know, it's like, it was again like 10 degrees or maybe even colder. And I'm thinking, I don't have like long johns for Henry, who's five. And I'm like, this poor kid is like dancing his way down the street. And we walk to school too. So it's, you know, he's dancing his way down the street. He's got like warm everything else. He's got a warm winter jacket, warm hat, scarf, you know, warm enough shoes. And he's got these flimsy little like yoga pants on. And I'm like,
right.
Well, I, you know, I'm glad that the walk is only about 5 minutes. Well, happy New Year, Manton.
Thank you. You too.
We made it to the next year, and it's great to be kicking off this. It almost feels like I almost want to call it a new season of Core Intuition. But the most exciting thing, speaking of the weather, speaking of kicking off new things, and speaking of you, Manton Reese, November 2013 has finally arrived.
It was a couple months late this year, but
so, but does it still say, wait, oh no, you changed it on the sunlit.io teaser page. It says coming to the App Store in January. And I thought, when I saw that, I thought, oh, here goes Manton Reese again with his highfalutin, high-minded claims. Coming to the app. Why don't you just like change it, make it into a script that says whatever the current month is plus two.
Okay. How do you know it doesn't just have the current month?
Right.
When you called me on that November thing in December and the webpage still said November, I updated it to have a little strike through, but for a few weeks. And then I officially changed it to January. And yeah, you know what? Whatever. It's late. We actually have just submitted the app to the App Store, to Apple.
Ooh, all right.
And not only have we submitted it once, we've submitted it many, many times.
just in case, huh?
No, not just in case. I've had to reject, self-reject before they have a chance to review. Mm. I found last-minute bugs. And I hope there's no limit on the number of times you can do that.
Yeah.
Because
you're pushing it.
I've had to do this a few times. You know, I hate the waiting period so much that when I finally decide, okay, it's ready to submit, I submit it knowing that I do have some more time to test and before it actually sees, you know, the light of day. And of course, there were some last minute changes that broke other things that used to work perfectly. And there was a kind of a series of those. And so I submitted it, found some more problems, rejected it, fixed some bugs. So I've gone through that process a few times, but I think that the build that is up there, which I submitted last night, is going to ship as 1.0. And meanwhile, we've got a branch for 1.0.1, and hopefully we'll get an update out for anything that we missed pretty quickly.
Well, I was going to congratulate you, Manton, on finally submitting to the App Store, but submission is only as good as your unwillingness to reject it.
So. And of course, Apple could still reject it too.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, I mean, one of the weird things about the app is that it does require an app.net login to use. You know, we may remove that restriction at some point, but for 1.0, it does require that because a lot of the features make use of app.net for syncing, for publishing, for finding friends lists, whatever. And there's a whole number of reasons Apple could not like the way we have that set up. So we'll just have to see. I hope they'll approve it, and I hope it'll ship next week. But
what's an example of a reason that they would have a problem with that? It's not generally useful without this special membership, or because like you can get a free app.net account now.
Usually, the problem isn't that it requires something else, although it might be if the reviewer has never heard of this before. Right. Usually, the problem is they figure out some way to, you know, like sign up for an app.net account with a credit card or something. In other words, so there's some backdoor where you can bypass giving Apple their 30% cut of in-app purchase. So there's something like that sometimes.
Right. You can stress that you can make a app.net account for free, right? Actually, the thing I wanted to ask you is, did you make like a special app.net account just for Apple to test with? Because I think that's a good technique. I did something like that when I submitted a what did I submit? I think I submitted Moonshot, my never shipped photo blogging app. I think I submitted it at that point in time where they were like threatening to take back the SKUs or cancel the apps if you didn't submit something. And so I was like, I submitted something and they just never released it. But, you know, you can, in the special reviewer notes, you can say, this is your app.net account, Apple testing, password, Apple testing 123. And then what's great about that is it gives you the opportunity to go preload if you want their test account with content that makes the app meaningful.
Yes. You know what? Now, thank you for mentioning that, because I had that a few months back in my list of things to do. And I'm looking at iTunes Connect right now. It looks like I never entered that. Luckily, it looks like I can edit that even after the app has been submitted, the reviewer notes.
Give it a try.
I'm going to try that. Yeah, you're totally right, because that'll just make the process go more smoothly for those folks, I hope.
Yeah.
What you were saying about, like, you know, click here to sign up or whatever, I think Apple actually does not like the wording of that, the way you just said it. I think you're better off, you know, don't quote me on this, but I think you're better off just saying, if you already have a password signed in here, then if you need an account, click here. I think that's where they start to throw up their hands. So what we do is we say, you know, the best way is you, if you already have the app.net official iPhone app installed, you know, that's kind of the default way. It says, you know, click here to sign in with that. And then we also say if you have a password, you can enter directly. But we don't actually say sign up for a free account here anywhere. And we'll just have to see, you know, how they react to that.
Well, that's the kind of thing, if you're worried about that being problematic, you kind of want to be like as gentle as possible with the first release, right? Because you want to get it approved. And then you figure after it's approved, maybe there'll be less, you know, scrutiny about it. Who knows? That may not be true, but
right.
In any case, Manton, assuming you don't end up rejecting it in perpetuity, congratulations on, you know, I know how hard that is. 1.0 is for people who don't ship software, who have never shipped a 1.0, they are not likely to appreciate just how hard it is to get to that point where you're willing to draw a line and say, this is it. This is 1.0.
Yep, it's so hard. And, you know, I mentioned on a previous show, the reason we're 2 months late is because I really wanted to go back and polish things and make things more smooth. And we did a lot of that, but there are still areas that maybe we should wait another month and fix this part and add this part. And at some point, you know, you just got to ship it, especially this app where I don't know how it's going to be received at all. I feel like we really need to get it out there. So there are things that I would have loved to include in 1.0, but at some point, you just got to ship it and then we'll follow up.
Well, I heard John Gruber actually on the talk show talking with, who was it, a recent guest about something like this. And he pointed out, like, you know, Vesper has taken a lot of flack for not having some features, like among them syncing. Mm-hmm. And some people say, like, how could you possibly ship an app like this without syncing?
Right.
And it's easy to get behind that thinking when you are in the mood to think that the app is worthless without syncing. But it's not worthless, you know? Mm-hmm. It is an app that does some things that do not include sync. And as John pointed out on the show, you know, they would not be in a better position. You know, as it's played out, they're still working on syncing. And it's been over 6 months since they shipped the app. Mm-hmm. So would they be better off having spent another 6 months working on the app, not have any name recognition yet, not have any customer feedback, not have any money from selling it, you know? And granted, there are some product choices that you make that may be the difference between making any money or not. So, okay, let's just agree that, for instance, there is some feature you could leave out that might mean you don't actually make any money. But if there's any way you can start getting an income revenue from your 1.0 and get the customer feedback that's going to help the app grow more, you know, appropriately for your audience, then you want to do that now, not wait another 6 months or a year. I know you said maybe we should wait another month, but you know how that goes. You end up waiting. Yeah. And this is from the guy who's been waiting 6 years to ship Mars Edit for iOS. So,
yeah, I mean, you're totally right. The other side of that, though, is that first impressions do matter. And there's a possibility you'll ship a 1.0 and someone will try it and they won't like it for some reason and they will never try it again. Now, hopefully most people will give it another shot, or if there's a bug, they'll keep up to date with new versions and they'll understand and respect when it's been fixed. But there's that chance that you'll miss your window of having a hit product, or not hit product. Maybe isn't the right way to say it, because that's not my goal, to have hit products, just products that people love and they're successful. Yep. Not that, you know, I have no expectations.
Hit is a loaded term.
Yeah, exactly. But a lot of, I mean, with the App Store now, I think a lot of people that are much more successful than I am, believe that the only way to be successful is to have a hit product at the beginning that hits the top 10 and then sort of rides the wave for a little while. And maybe they're right, I don't know, but that's not how I approach building software. So I'm fine with just getting enough users that the app makes money and that people like it, and then I can keep making it better.
I think there's also, I think there's truth in the idea that you want a good first impression, but I think a lot of people sort of paralyze themselves over dramatizing that. And mm-hmm. it's like, yes, a first good impression is always a good thing, but in life, there's so much variation about who your audience is at any given time that you actually have a lot of opportunities for first impressions.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people, especially people who haven't shipped software before, are really tuned into this because they sort of see having a great first product and first 1.0 as the make or break event that's either going to validate their ability to ship, you know, their own products, or it's going to devastate them and send them back to, you know, to feeling that they can't do that on their own. So I can get behind that. There's a lot of emotion and psychology behind it. But the fact of the matter is, if you can survive a bad first impression, it doesn't really leave you that bad off for, you know, regrouping, putting your thoughts back together. If you need to, you rebrand the product completely. If you need to, you rebrand your company completely. You know, there's a reason that if you go through the supermarket and walk down the aisle, there's like half the products say great new taste.
Mm-hmm.
Why do they say great new taste? Because on some level, they feel like their 1.0 or 2.0 was not good enough.
Right.
And they're like, we know, we recognize that lots of people out there may have tried, you know, oat nuts mm-hmm. and they didn't have a good impression. But the other thing is, like, there's all those people, but then there's like a huge number of people, hundreds or thousands of people who are going to see the oat nuts box for the first time. And it's yeah. the same with apps. And I get a little bit of a grumpy old man, dismissive face when I hear people talking about the idea that, that like you can exhaust easily your sort of like impression on the software market. And especially like I heard somebody saying the other day, oh, you know who it was? It was our friend Justin Williams. He was on the Iterate podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And he said something about elements. He said he thought that everybody who, and this is not critical of Justin, I'm just using this as an example because I think it's meaningful. He's talking about how sales of elements had gone down. And one of the reasons was he thought that everybody who needed or wanted an iOS text editor had already made up their mind and bought something. And that's just not the way that this market works, because even if you just look at the size of the market and the fact that some percentage of those people are dying every month and some percentage of those people have just gotten their first iPhone.
Ooh.
I mean, 5 years ago, people who are adults now on their own, living on their own with their own incomes, were in junior high school.
Right. Yeah. And look at the numbers Apple released this week, right? I think all the revenue that the App Store has generated in this last year is more or equal to all the previous years, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, huge number of people buying apps again for the first time this year. So if you had made that statement a year and a half ago, said it's done, no one's buying the apps, well, guess what?
Yeah.
You know, tons of new sales this year.
Okay, I don't want to go on too long about this, Manton, but I'm just dying to make one more metaphor comparison.
Mm-hmm.
I think selling apps, in some respect, is kind of like going out on the street corner in New York City and trying to sell something from a table. In the sense that if you really catch on and you're really good and sell something that everyone loves, yes, it's going to be great that you have that name recognition. There's people are going to be like, oh, have you tried Daniel's pretzels? They're insane. You know, they're the best. However, if Daniel's pretzels are a flop, you just like make a different pretzel, go back out the next day, and like, you know, 100,000 different people are going to walk by.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's an apt comparison in many respects to the scenario developers face with the app stores, because the fact of the matter is, if you're not a success, you're not making very many impressions at all, let alone bad impressions.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you're right. I know this, and I probably place a little too much emphasis on the 1.0, but at the same time, I love this app that we built. There's a lot to it that I don't think is obvious on the surface. A lot of time was put into it. And so I just want people to like it. That's
absolutely
the bottom line.
Yeah.
I mean, also there's this other thing we're hoping for, which is, I mentioned the restriction. You have to have an app.net account. We don't know how that's going to go. And we'll be able to tell immediately because we can track number of downloads versus number of people who have actually activated it versus number of people who actually bought it. Because it's a free download, $5 if you want to unlock all the features. So we'll be able to immediately tell if 1,000 people download and only 2 people activate with app.net, only 1 person buys it. Well, guess what? The app.net restriction was possibly a mistake.
Yeah.
But the other nice thing about that is even if it does turn out that lopsided where a lot of people download it because they just randomly come across it or they see an article about it, but they are not happy with signing in, it kind of treats it as a kind of a soft launch almost, my hope is that it's almost like a bootstrap where it starts in the app.net community, people that are already on and have a password. That's where the app starts and word of mouth spreads. And then if we ever allow you to use the app without that restriction, that's almost like the 2.0. I mean, maybe it's not called 2.0, but that's almost like the where you take it to the next level and expand beyond that first sort of smaller user base.
I think there's a lot to that. And if you can get any traction at all, if you get using that metaphor again, if you get this niche of now these people love pretzels and I found the right pretzels for them, that gives you the opportunity to move on from there. And, it's just getting any kind of traction is useful. And actually, Justin, he recently acquired Glassboard, right? That was kind of big news for him.
Huge, yeah.
And I think there's some similarities there because Glassboard, as you know, is it's a little bit of an insular community, I think. It's a little bit like you kind of have to be in this kind of group of people who gets Glassboard, and maybe you have some friends who have set up, groups on there. But it has maybe some of that same stuff going for it that you're describing, where the experience of having run Glassboard and having the early adopters, it sort of paves the way for opening it up into a much more, mass appeal type of service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point.
All right. Well, we are very pleased this week to have back as sponsors of the show Smile. And Smile offers the PDF Pen family, which includes PDF Pen for Mac, PDF Pen for iPad, PDF Pen for iPhone, and PDF Pen Scan Plus. PDF Pen makes it easy to go mobile with PDF Pen on your Mac, iPad, and iPhone. You can have PDF Pen's editing power on all your devices. PDF Pen Scan Plus, the newest member of the PDF Pen family, lets you add scanning and OCR to your mobile toolkit. PDF Pen Pro offers extra PDF power on the Mac, including interactive form creation, creating PDFs from websites, and editing tables of contents. Visit smilesoftware.com/coreint for details and a brief video introduction to the PDF Pen family.
It's great. Thanks for sponsoring the show again, and definitely check out that video. It's a short and really nicely done, talking briefly about the different apps. And I love this company, and the apps are really nice. For me, a lot of the times, I don't do a lot with PDF, but a lot of times, I need to sign some document or something. So much easier to do that on an iPad, I think, with something like PDF Pen. Open the thing, do the little pen tool, scribble your name or whatever. It's so much easier. I think about the dark days when I'd scan paper in with a
print
real
it out,
scanner.
Print it out, then sign it, then scan it.
Right, exactly. It's horrible. It took forever. The quality is bad. It's so much easier doing it on an iPad. And of course, they sync with Dropbox, Evernote, all sorts of different stuff. Has a lot of features. And even if you don't want to just totally sync with Dropbox or something, they have support for just opening documents and sending them to other apps. I've noticed a lot of apps still don't support this. And it's on the Mac, we're used to this, you drag a document into an app and open it. It's all apps that have some kind of document-based, model behind them do this. For some reason, on iOS, it's an afterthought for a lot of people. So it's nice to see PDF Pen support. You're browsing in the Dropbox app. You can say, open in PDF Pen. Same thing. It opens it up. You can sign something. You can rearrange pages, whatever. You want to send it to another app, you can do that. So it's nice to see a full-featured bunch of nice stuff in there.
Yeah, I often kind of tease PC users, Windows users, because they are so stuck without, PDF is kind of ubiquitous on the Mac, and that's thanks to Apple. And it's great that we have preview built in on our Macs. But ever since I started using PDF Pen on the Mac, I started using it because it has this great OCR capability for my scanner. But then more and more, you just kind of realize, wow, even though we are so lucky to have ubiquitous PDF support on the Mac, you run into these situations where you just need an app that's more dedicated to getting the job done than Preview is. So it's really great to have Smile sponsoring our show, and PDF Pen, we can recommend. This whole lineup of apps is just really powerful, and it's great that they're tackling, you know, the whole, you notice, like, they support Mac, they support iOS, they still don't support Windows, but as far as I know, but that'll give us something to continue to tease our Windows friends about. So thanks again, Smile Software. And folks, especially all you folks out there who, like us, are indie software developers or who are aspiring to it, another great thing is just go look at this video on their site, because it's a great example of, like, the kind of marketing also that we can aspire to do as indie software developers. It's a really well-done video, short, and gets the point across about the value of their apps. SmileSoftware.com/coreint. You know, a few months ago or weeks ago, in the whole wake of everybody seemingly getting acquired by Yahoo and everybody also seemingly retiring from their notable Mac and iOS journalism roles, remember David Pogue, like, famously went to Yahoo, and that was announced and that was public. He's going to Yahoo. And there was also this, like, situation where Walt Mossberg and his company, the All Things D site, they announced, like, a couple months ago that they were going to leave the Wall Street Journal, and they hinted that they would have a new venture. And that, of course, got me thinking, oh my God, what if Walt Mossberg is also going to Yahoo?
Right.
And it's going to be like Walt.
Super team of tech journalists.
And Katie Couric. And I just thought, like, well, I was curious to see what was going to happen. And finally, on January 1st, they announced that they would be launching their new site on January 2nd. And it is not at Yahoo. It's called re/coded. And I guess, you know what they share in common with Yahoo?
Punctuation.
Pointless punctuation.
Yeah. Do you pronounce the slash? Probably not.
Recoded. It's a meh name. I give it my biggest comic book store guy meh. But it's kind of nice to see a new site just emerge almost seemingly from nowhere. I mean, the Wall Street Journal is maintaining its personal tech, whatever, section. So it's not All Things D, but it's its own thing. And it kind of just feels like, maybe it's because I'm paying more attention, but it kind of feels like there's, in a sense, just more journalism going on. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's good journalism necessarily, but, you know, it's growing. There's a lot more of it. Seems like people are affiliating with more sites. And it sort of drew my attention to the fact, you know, like, we have a lot of sites to go to these days.
Yeah, that's true. The more the better. I mean, I think the web is better when things are split up a little bit, and where you don't just have, like, one big site controlling everything, like the Facebook of tech news or something. I mean, I think we're better off when we have several things. It made me think, though, when you said, you know, they kind of renamed All Things D. Like, I wonder what happens to every link and everything else on the old All Things D, because that stuff just kind of redirects to the new Wall Street Journal blog, tech section, whatever. And it kind of makes me wonder if we've lost anything in that transition. Did that content move to Recode? Is it buried somewhere?
Right. Well, I just did a quick Google, and we don't know that this is going to last, but I did a quick Google for, like, All Things D to try to find an article. And at the moment we're recording this, January 8th, it still seems to link to All Things D. All Things D still seems to be a site. So,
well, are you linking to, what are you linking?
Well, here's
to
what's funny, actually,
or like a deep article.
To a deep article. So actually, this is telling, because I linked to a deep article and it brings up all the old All Things D Chrome.
Oh yeah.
And if I just go to allthingsd.com, then that really reloads to wallstreetjournal.d. So yeah. maybe that's their long-term solution, is to do sort of the right thing by keeping all that content hosted mm-hmm. and referenceable. So we can't say, obviously we don't know, but it may go away. It may just be, this is somebody slow and like sweeping out the cobwebs.
They don't know where the server is that's hosting this.
But this is a good solution, because if this were the long-term solution, actually, I think that that's good as well, because keeping the old Chrome clarifies under whose voice the article was written, right?
Mm, yeah, interesting. I totally like this. I kind of hope they keep it. And they can also put a little banner at the very top that links to the new Wall Street Journal's tech section or whatnot. But I hope they keep at least some form of this, where all that content, all those URLs last. Because I don't know, I hate when something is acquired, it just, poof, it's gone.
And it's in their interest, too, in the Wall Street Journal's interest, because it may just be a Google search that leads to somebody clicking the link. But that's actually another question. I don't know if this ad that shows up on the article is an antique ad from the All Things D era, or if it's an ad from the Wall Street Journal's current, bookings.
Right.
But that would be a good opportunity for them, at least, to continue having all this content be Google referenceable, because every time somebody does go to it, they get an ad exposure.
Well, so meanwhile, we have the new Yahoo Tech section launched. David Pogue, I guess, is heading that up, and he's got other folks writing on that. And Yahoo announced a whole bunch of stuff at CES.
Yeah,
this
they're
week.
Kind of on fire, at least in terms of having things to say that they're doing. I haven't looked too carefully at how the doing of it is panning out, but actually their Yahoo Tech site looks, it looks fancy at least.
Yeah,
and
good.
They also launched a food site. But one of the things I noticed from the, I didn't watch the keynote at CES, but I noticed from a summary of it and a sort of transcription of it that the approach David Pogue was taking was kind of poking fun at maybe not all, literally all of the other news sites, but many mm-hmm. of them by name or by strong implication. And he claims that what's going to set Yahoo Tech apart is they're going to use real common English language and not use buzzwords.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's necessarily, what the world's dying for or not, but we'll see.
Well,
it's a new voice. It represents him and his team, I guess, staking out for themselves an ambition, which is a lot more than some sites seem to do.
Yeah, I think he made a really good case for having a journalist have a voice where you don't have to agree with everything they say, but you respect them and you follow that because you've read dozens of things by that person. You kind of know how they approach technology or whatever. And as I was reading that, I was thinking, people at Macworld, Mac Stories, other news sites, iOS sites that we read all the time. That's true. I mean, I know and recognize certain, authors, and it carries more weight, and I have a better idea of like where they're coming from when I read something by them. So I think he really hit on a good sort of tone to start out the tech site.
And it's kind of like something I noticed, I was reading The Verge's coverage of it, and they were pretty dismissive of it because it was basically saying they and their audience are not significant to, I mean, that was their sort of interpretation. It's like, this is not, but it makes a lot of sense from a business point of view. If Yahoo were to look at the landscape of tech blogs that are out there today and say, how do we get advertisers to pay us for something special? Well, something special would be opening up or obtaining an audience that is not the usual like nerd scene.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's I think what sites like, the Wall Street Journal provided probably a bit more of a quote unquote ordinary audience than, say, The Verge. But I'm sure that there are advertisers who want to target that super nerd scene like The Verge has. But then there are also a bunch of advertisers, I'm sure, who want like the equivalent of, the ABC family movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they want it for a tech, tech oriented context.
Yeah, I don't know. It makes sense to me. There are probably more Yeah, it seems like it's a bigger market of non-nerds than people. But I mean, everyone is a geek on some subject, right? So, I mean, there are people that are not, they have no idea what we're talking about on this podcast or, you know, Mac or iOS development, but they know everything about some sort of TV or some other specific thing. I thought he made a good kind of pitch to let's make it general and let's make it approachable for a lot of different people. And I mean, really, when we talked about it, it's great to have multiple sources of news, obviously, and they shouldn't all be clones of one another.
Yep, definitely. So I guess it's interesting. I think we've talked a bit about Yahoo over the past year, especially, and how we, I think you and I, Manton, basically agree that in spite of some decisions we question at Yahoo, we think that basically Marissa Mayer is proving that she can get stuff done. I mean, things have changed. And what I liked about the what it looked like to me with the whole CES thing is it was a company that was giving a keynote with a little bit of that Apple style panache, right? Like kind of like we got some mojo here. And I can't imagine Yahoo, what, a year ago? When did she come on board? I can't imagine them a year, or it's definitely not 2 years ago, going to CES and being like, all right, everybody, you've all been dying to hear what we're up to. Now we're going to tell you, right?
Right.
It's like, yeah, you thought that was great. Let us tell you about YUI framework, right? That was like kind of like what Yahoo was known for a little while there.
It was like, yeah. And when they did that Apple thing that Apple, I guess they still do, but they certainly used to do when they went to Macworld, which wasn't even really their show, is they would hold and bundle a few things to announce at the same time.
Yep.
And so they did that, obviously the tech and the food site, but they also shipped two new iPhone apps that they acquired at various points. So, I mean, they had several things to sort of ship at once and make a splash with.
And they had Saturday Night Live actors.
Did they? Yeah. What? I missed this.
Yeah. They had, and they had John Legend. They're trying to go all Apple style. Yeah, they had, I didn't see it. I just saw the slides from The Verge, but they had a lot of showmanship. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Good.
And, we'll see, we'll see how that leads for Yahoo. I still, I guess I should disclose that I still own some Yahoo stock.
And, me too, a little bit.
And you also own that one share of Twitter still.
Right. Which is, oh man, I can't wait to retire on this thing. I haven't checked in the last couple of days, but man, I'm starting to make money on that one share.
I know. See it's going to be like the Forrest Gump story. Well, I just bought this one share of some bird company.
Yeah.
All right, Manton. Well, it's been great talking to you in 2014, and let's make a habit of it. Let's talk every week.
Sounds good. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you next week.